This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wendy's Big Show on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Bill Schmidt, joining us now alongside Gary Ellerson, our Badger and Packer running back, Leap 36, Leroy Butler, Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist. We welcome in another Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist, Super Bowl winning head coach of your Green Bay Packers, Mike Holmgren, joins us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Coach Holmgren, appreciate the time, and as a Green Bay Packer fan, I have to say, appreciate everything you did for the organization.
Well, that's very kind of you, and it's great to talk with you guys, and My old partner, Leroy Butler, who I hope and he should get in the Hall of Fame this year. I'm pulling for you, buddy.
I'm trying to figure this out. How are you going to go in, but I want you to do my speech? I'm
confused. Yeah, how is that going to work?
Well, I don't know. I think probably the odds are I'll be able to do your speech, and you don't have to worry about that.
And you just stay up there and do yours. I do have a question for you, because I know you played with both of the franchises. But what Matt LaFleur did in his first year, Coach, I remember you first came in your first year, but the first time we were able to go to the playoffs, you know, what kind of goes through a new coach's mind when you're getting into the playoffs and it's kind of new for you and your team?
Well, I think, first of all, I think he's done a great job. I think the team, to me, when I've had a chance to watch it, it looks really good. Aaron's playing well. And defensively, they're putting a lot of pressure on the receivers. They've got a couple of guys that are really, really great receivers. So I think their coach has done a great job. I think coming into a new situation, Leroy, and you know this, even when I came in, you kind of change things. You change things a little bit because the team has to reflect your personality, not the previous coach. And it's just that you're different. So you want the team to be what you want the team to be. And clearly he's done that. He has a good relationship with the quarterback. And, I just think it helps to have an Aaron Rodgers on your roster when you take over as a new guy. You know, we traded for Brett, and Brett was he wasn't a veteran. He was a rookie and a wild stallion. So it took us a little while, but once we figured that thing out, you know, you guys on defense helped us, and then we got there.
Yeah, I want to take that to the next level. How do you get guys to play different in the playoffs? You know, the regular season is one way. I just remember these conversations you used to give us to get the most out of your star players in the playoffs, how important it was. I think we were like 48-6 at home, but what did you do to get us to that level as a coach? What can you say? What you change things? I mean, I was telling Steve and Baby Tosh and Gary how you would come down and sit next to a particular player in his locker room and just have a one-on-one discussion with him. What do you have to do in this day and age to get your star players to perform in the playoffs?
I did it with you guys, and I did it with the guys in Seattle, and I just grew up learning this, I think, and communicating with players. You guys, it's your team. I'm there to try and put you in a position to the best position to win, but many times you guys are playing the game, and so I'm there to help you. And the other thing I would challenge you and the team to, you know, I thought there's four distinct seasons. There's a preseason, there's a regular season, there's the playoffs, and then there's the Super Bowl game. And there was no question in my mind that during the season you guys sold out and you gave me everything. Then when you go into the playoffs, what you talk to your team about, you say, I know you gave me everything. You have not left anything on the field, but you know what? Now I'm going to ask you for more. Reach down and get some more. You can do this. And just kind of encourage you that way. And I'll tell you what, you guys, you and Reggie and Favre and all those guys, you responded that way. I mean, as good as you were in the regular season, when you got to the playoffs, it was special. It was different. And you reach down somewhere. Every player has to decide. You reach down and you get some more. And that's what you did.
Coach, can you talk about Leroy and what he meant to that team in 96?
Yeah, I mean, well, he was a leader, obviously. Aside from being a great football player, you know, a very talented man, you know, he was a leader. And I don't think he didn't strike me as a tremendously vocal guy running around doing everything, but he was a leader when he had to be vocally. And then also his example on the field. You know, and it never came out. He was, I'm sure he had bumps and bruises just like everyone else, but he's a tough guy. And then, of course, when he jumped into the stands that first time, it kind of set the tone for years and years and years to come.
When he jumped in the stands, what did you say to yourself? What is this guy doing?
Yeah, I did. You know, because and Leroy would tell you this. Maybe he's told you this already. I was kind of old-fashioned, and I wasn't big on like now what they do and the dances and stuff. That's not my thing. So, but you know what? When he did that, I said, okay. And I think I may have even said, hey, let's not do that anymore. But it was done.
Well, if you didn't like that, then you probably weren't a big fan of Robert Brooks making a song of it.
No. I mean, you know what? That whole thing, I will tell you this, and I hope. Leroy would say this. We did have fun, though. I mean,
yes,
football is hard.
Yes.
It's hard, and the guys work hard. But even to our wheel that, you know, the flower wheel, when guys miss practice that I'd have, I did try to do some fun things just to kind of relieve the pressure just a little bit, because it's a long season and it's tough. And I hope they realize that.
When you look at where we are now today in the National Football League, as far as quarterback play and the running back effect on this league versus where it was when you got to Green Bay, and how much you really use the running backs versus how they use them now and the ways they use them. Do you like the way of the new offense in the NFL now, or does it feel a little bit more like arena football to you?
No. I think football's ever-changing, and I think the NFL, it was called a copycat league often. And I think what's coming out of college now and the different rule changes and things, you're seeing a different type of athlete. Look at Russell Wilson. He's a great player. He's not the tallest guy, and I think he dropped to the third round because of that. But then you look at the young man at Baltimore and the guy in Texas. You know, it's a different style coming out of college. And then as a coach, and Leroy knows Andy Reid very well.
Yep.
In Kansas City, what they're doing with Mahomes. He's a different style quarterback, but you have to adjust because of what's going on in college now. And then, you know, you can say, oh, you know, we're going to run my offense. Well, that's silly. You know, I mean, you can keep the good stuff, but then you must adjust to the players you have. And I think it's kind of exciting. It's fun. Now, I think the rules have changed to make it harder on the defensive guys. Mm-hmm. And I think Leroy would tell you that. But and there's a lot more passing. The passing yardage now numbers are staggering. But it's fun to watch, and it's still a great game. And we're going to see a great game on Sunday.
Talking with Mike Holmgren, Super Bowl champion and now Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist here on the Wendy's Big Show, 105.7 FM. The Fan. Mike, it's fascinating hearing you just talk about adjusting to the players you have, because you saw the West Coast offense run to an absolute T in San Francisco. Joe Montana, Steve Young, seeing it to perfection. Then you came in to Green Bay, and you had Brett Favre, who was a wild gunslinger guy. How much adjusting did you have to do in those first couple of years to understand how to harness that talent you had?
Well, it was interesting because, yeah, you're right. I came and I was the quarterback coach and coordinator in San Francisco with Montana and Steve Young. And when you work for Bill Walsh in that position, I had to have my iron pants on because I was I got ripped often about how precise things had to be in playing the position. And so that's how I learned it, and that's how I tried to teach it. And then I get Brett, who is multi-talented, but was not and disciplined in many ways, but not the same type of quarterback as those other guys. Not the same type. So, you know, I had to adjust. And I remember, and Leroy might remember this too. We played somebody, and we won, and we were traveling home. And he came up, and he would never do this, but Brett came up and sat next to me. And there was a seat open next to me. No one really ever wanted to sit in that seat because usually got blistered pretty good. But he sits down, and I go, what do you want? And he goes, you know what? I get it. And something clicked, and he was, I said, I've been trying to help you the whole time, you know. And we laughed a little bit. But he finally gets it, and that's what you have to do as a coach. You have to communicate and use the talents that he has while still teaching some of the basic things that I think, or I don't care what offense you run, there's certain types of disciplines you need to be successful.
You know, that feels like and sounds a lot like Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers this year. You know, Matt LaFleur talked about, you know, it's going to be a little give and take, and we got to try to work at it and do it together.
That's right, and that's exactly right. Now, the problem that can originate is if one of the sides isn't trying, you know, and if you have the toughest guys were the real bright quarterbacks, you know, the Harvard guys or the, you know, and I had Steve Young and Matt Hasselbeck were cerebral. They were always, and they'd ask questions instead of just saying, I want to do it this way. They go, why? You know, we'd have meetings like that. And pretty soon they figured out that I was trying to help them and just kind of work with me. And if you have questions, good questions, I'll be happy to help you with it. But this has worked, and it's going to work again. And so that type of conversation, there's a trust that has to develop between the play caller and the head coach. And if you have one of those star quarterbacks or a great player like that,
and from
it's
your
it's like LaRoy on defense. You know, you trust the defensive play caller, Fritz Schirmer, LaRoy Butler. They trusted one another.
Yes.
And so that's how it has to be.
From your observation with this offense, do you still see it that way with LaFleur and Rodgers, the trust?
It seems that way. I mean, I'm not there, and I really don't know LaFleur at all.
Mm.
I know Aaron just a little bit, but it seems that way. You know, that they're, you know, you see, but you'll always see, you know what, it kills me because people say, they watch it on television, they say, did you see him give him that look?
Well, Coach, is that the look that you gave Far One when you said no more rocket ball?
Yeah, none of that crazy
stuff. You know what? Fortunately, I never yelled at anybody.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Coach, here's why I think you're a Hall of Famer. Now, just hear me out for a second. I know I'm biased, but I want people to really just understand where you're coming from. We just lost to the Cowboys in Dallas. We're on the plane in 95. Now, everybody's feeling bad, and I remember you getting up, and you're walking through the plane, and you're thanking everybody. And you said, next year we're going to win it. Next year we're going to win it. That's all guys talk about now when we get together. I remember Coach saying, next year we're going to win it, and next year we did win it. But you have to tell me the story and tell the audience about the story about Reggie White, because getting Reggie White to me was paramount for everything we had to do for leadership, as far as being the first free agent and why he chose the smallest market. And he always talked about something that you said or something on his answer machine or something. He was telling us how you and Ron Wolf just kind of presented a plan to him. But tell me how you were able to sign Reggie White. That was amazing.
Well, you know what? It was. And I remember when Ron came in during free agency, and Ron said, we're gonna go after Reggie White. I said, that's awesome. I mean, because Reggie playing against him, he always had a game plan for him because he was
right.
So good. And so, I said, great. And he's making the, if you remember, Reggie was making the tour. You know, he went to Baltimore. They gave him the keys to the city. He's getting fur coats and he's getting all sorts of stuff. He goes to, you know, somewhere else, New York. And I made the comment, I mean, what are we going to do? Give him a block of cheese? What are we going to do for him? You know? And they said, well, you know, let's just get him. So Ray Rhodes and I, and Roy, you remember Ray?
Oh, yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah, and we went down and visited Ray and visited Reggie, surprised him at his home, had lunch with him. So he knew we wanted him badly. He knew that. And so we came home, and Reggie is a Christian man, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I my faith was very strong, and so I phoned him. And I said, Reggie, this is God. I want you to go to Green Bay. And then I hung up, left it on his anthem. And then he tells me later, you know, fortunately, he had a great sense of humor, as you know.
Yes, yes.
So he didn't took it like I meant for him to take it. But, you know, we got him. And I think Ron Wolf said, I said, you know, he knows that story. And he goes, well, it also helped we paid him a lot of money.
Yeah.
No doubt.
That didn't hurt.
No doubt.
But I'll tell you what it did, though. We had arguably the greatest defensive player ever, African-American, black kid who came in. Mm-hmm. And now you could recruit kids like that into Green Bay, which is a different, you know, a different community at that time, you know, for the black athlete. And it just made everything better. It made everything better, aside from the fact he was a great guy and a great football player.
Talking with Mike Holmgren here on the Wendy's Big Show, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Mike, can you ever comment or think of somebody that was similar to that, the transition you guys made in Seattle?
Seattle, we had to build it a little differently. I don't think we had it. We weren't able to get a Reggie White. I did not have a Leroy Butler on the defense already there. So we built it piece by piece. And I think when Matt came in, Hasselbeck, and we finally found our starting quarterback, and he started to play and develop. And then Sean Alexander was a great running back for us.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
And then on defense, you know, I remember getting – and Leroy, you know, remember John Randall?
Yep.
You know, we signed while we were getting better. We signed a couple of free agents that I knew, you know, maybe had a year or two left, but they came in and you know how valuable it is when you sign a player that is a good football player. Maybe he's at the end of his career, but the younger guys listen to him. They look up to him, and he's great in the locker room. And so that's what we did. We built it a little differently in Seattle.
Did you have Big Walter Jones from Florida State? I think he was there.
Yeah, he was.
Yep. That guy's
you know
amazing.
What's funny is Walt, Walt's amazing. Now a radio personality in Seattle. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Okay, and I, you know what? And it puts a smile on your face because I probably had him for, I don't know, 9 years. And in those 9 years, he probably said 10 words to me.
I know. He's a quiet guy.
And now we go to fundraisers and we do stuff. He's like, I hardly recognize him. He's never shuts up. He's going like crazy. I go, Walt, where did this come from? Coach Mike, it's my profession now.
That's great. Hey, you were in Cleveland for a brief time there towards the end. Can you talk a little bit what that organization is really all about right now? Because I, for one, was shocked that they let John Dorsey go.
I was too. You know, and I tell people whether they would choose to believe me or not. I went in and I was the president, and we tried to fix a lot of things. There was a lot of things that were broken, and financially, so the president is not the coach. So I was doing other things with the mayor and political things. Coaching is much more fun, and if I had to do it all over again, I probably would have tried to coach the football team. But I had a coach, and I had a general manager, and we were building it. We couldn't find the quarterback. You know, we didn't get the quarterback, but we were building it little by little, and you see players now, you know, that we drafted that are playing are really good players. But then right when I thought we were kind of going over, getting over the all the stuff and starting to make real progress, a new owner came in. And so as what happens many times, we shook hands and he hired his guy and off you go. The thing I told him, the owner goes, what do you think? I said, well, listen, hire good football people and just be the owner. Don't get involved in stuff. Just be the owner, you know. And some owners don't want to hear that. They want to dabble and they want to do stuff. And it's the football business is different than running a wherever they made their money. Mm-hmm. It's just different. And it's taken them. It appears as though it's taken them. Heck, the guys they replaced my group with were there a year. Then after that, the next group, general manager, they were there 2 years. I mean, it's just, that's no way to run an organization, I don't think. And I didn't tell him anything other. Bill Polian or Bill Parcells or those guys didn't tell him because he'd ask. Ron Wolf told him the same thing. But Dorsey, I don't know. I was surprised because he put a group together. And I'm not in there, and I don't know the ins and outs of everything. But if they were going to make another change, it was my understanding that his responsibility, or at least who he had to answer to, would change. And he just didn't want to go for that. So he said, no. So they let him go.
Coach, can you talk? Because you do. You have, speaking of coaches, you've got a huge coaching tree out there. And that's why I think you should be a Hall of Famer. You talk about Andy Reid. I mean, you look at John Gruden. And you just, right now, you look at Mike McCarthy, and he's just got a job with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, that's another big-time franchise. Can you talk a little bit about Mike McCarthy and the job that he did in Green Bay and how he landed on his feet in Dallas?
Yeah, I'm very happy for Mike. I think Mike's an excellent football coach. I really do. And, you know, he did a lot of great things in Green Bay. He did. And he's got to receive credit for that. And now he gets another chance with Dallas. And I would, if I saw him today, or if I saw my friend Jerry Jones today, I'd talk to him about, you know, let it be now. Let him do it. Because, you know, talk to me about the job twice in Dallas. Once before he hired Bill Parcells and then another time. And we sat on the competition committee together for years. And we became friends, and we're still friends. But I said, he goes, what do you think? And I said, you know what? You and I are friends, and we've gotten to know each other, and it's good. I said, if I was the coach, I'd want to do it a certain way. And I know, as the owner, you want to do things a certain way. So I'm not sure it would work. So let's just remain friends and go about our business. I trust now because, I don't know. I think Jerry supports his guys a lot, but if he just lets Mike do this now and just kind of let him do his thing, I think they'll be better off, and because they have good talent there. I think they have pretty good talent, pretty good base.
And I thought that's why I gave him a 5-year deal. Maybe he'll let him do that because he worked with Ted Thompson. Sometimes he wanted a linebacker, and Ted Thompson would get him a defensive end. They had to convert him into that. But my question, Coach, now are you fully retired? Would you ever come back to coach? That's something that you kind of move on from, or you just kind of wait and see what happens?
You know what? I when I stopped coaching, because I'm 71 years old now, so but I still feel good and things are going good that way. But it was hard. It was hard because it gets in your veins and you love it. And I did it for a long time. And then, so I was out, and then the 49er job came open when they hired Chip Kelly. And I told my agent, I said, you know, if I ever did come back, that's where I grew up. And I grew up in San Francisco. You know, I coached for the Niners. I said, maybe that'd be my last shot. I said, reach out to them, would you, and just see. And he got back to me a couple of days later. And he goes, Mike, and he didn't know quite. He goes, they think you're too old. And so I go,
really?
So I said, you know what? Maybe it's something I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And so then at that point, I kind of changed my routine. And as much as I love the game, Kath and I are. I got 9 grandkids. I get to go to church on Sunday with them now. I didn't do that for 40 years. There are little things that I'm in a good spot. And no, to answer, that's a long answer to your question, but no, I'm done.
You're
I'm
still,
on the radio now a little bit, and so it's good.
You still riding a motorcycle, Coach?
Yeah, I got.
Oh, you know,
I got a bike in California, and I got a bike in up here in Seattle. Remember when I rode that bike in Dallas?
Yes. We all do. Yes. That was pretty ballsy, Coach. Pretty ballsy.
It was. They didn't quite know how to ask me on that one. Madden did the game, and he goes,
"That was awesome.
What are you doing?" I said, "Hey, I'm just trying to change that up. You know, we go down there, and they were really good. I just wanted to say maybe I can, I don't know, change the tone just a little bit, but it was fun." like I said, I did rant and rave a little bit, but I love those guys. I love the guy that's working with you, and I just felt that way about my players. So I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world, doing something I loved and for a long time, and I was privileged.
Who would be one of the few guys, if you can pull the curtain back, that you would think once you get in and hear that you're a Hall of Famer, who would be one of the guys that you looked up to, the Bill Walsh's types, that somebody may not know that that name may come up in your acceptance speech?
That influenced
a lot
them?
Of people don't. Yeah, I mean, because that West Coast offense was just on a well-oiled machine. It was just awesome.
That was, you know, and I owe all the guys that were head coaches when I was coming up, you know, helped me so much. And then when I came into the league, excuse me, you know, the older coaches in the league, Dan Reeves, Mike Ditka, Chuck Knox, they all reached out. They were good, and they helped me. So I there are too many to mention.
Right,
Coach. But did you have a stint at BYU with the organization, with the college coach there?
Lavelle Edwards.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean he was one of them. I would certainly, you know what, he was one of the finest human beings I've ever met.
Nice.
And if I learned anything from him, and I thought I was a pretty good student when I dealt with different things with coaches, I remember things, and I take notes. And what he taught more than anything was how to treat people, you know, how to, and you could have a tough game, and just how to treat people in general. And I think that was a lesson that actually everyone should try. Everyone should try it, because
absolutely,
Lavelle Edwards was the best. He really was. I owe him a great deal.
We played BYU, when I played Wisconsin, we played BYU, I believe, back in 1980. And we hadn't, I think Jim McMahon may have been a quarterback. We had never seen anything like that in the Big Ten whatsoever. I mean, the ball was just going anywhere. Our defensive staff didn't have no idea what to do or how to stop it. I mean, that was something that I think was very innovative for itself in that time back in 1980.
It absolutely was. I can remember having, in the off season, if you remember, coaches, players, teams would come in and visit during your spring practice. Maybe you weren't going to play them, but they'd visit. We'd have Penn State, Texas, big, big programs come into Lou Provo to kind of talk to Lavelle, because he knew a lot of the head coaches, and then watch us practice. And I can remember typically you'd after practice was over, their quarterback coach or whatever would visit with me. Their offensive line coach would go with our offense. You know, you'd have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And they'd come in and they'd go, particularly the guy from the Big Ten, and you know Wisconsin, they'd come in and say, you practice, all you do at practice is pass the ball. That's all you do. And I said, yeah. And he goes, but the other thing is, it never hits the ground.
Yeah.
The ball never hits the ground. I said, yeah, I know. That's what we try and do. Now, we had running plays. We had about six running plays, a couple of draws and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how Lavelle figured he had to play the game. Because, you know, in all honesty, at that time, you know, getting a black athlete to go to BYU was hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was difficult. But the teams we play typically were a little more athletic, a little faster, and things like that. So his idea was to we can do this passing the ball, and then they got great quarterbacks. And so but it was an interesting time. I learned so much from him. I really did.
Yeah, Gary has he's upset with you. That's just the last one. We'll let you get going.
Ooh.
He's upset. You
okay.
You're upset with Coach.
Why?
Because when Gary came to our practice, he saw us in shorts.
Yeah.
That's
and when
true.
He was,
and when
yeah.
he was
wow.
with his coaches,
well,
they
see,
were in three
well, it was
days.
Different. Well, I played for Forrest Gregg. I played with Forrest Gregg, and I call Ron, and I says, Ron, can I come up to a practice? Oh, yeah, sure, come on up, Gary. I come up to a practice, and these guys out here in shorts, they're running around. I call my team, and I say, man, you should see what these guys doing. These guys ain't doing nothing.
They got water breaks.
They got water breaks. I mean, I don't know what Coach Holmgren's doing up here with these kids.
Hey, you know what? I'll tell you one Forrest Gregg story. I get there, and we had the old barn. It was before the new
indoor. Yeah, the barn.
We had the barn, and you know, if you kick the ball, you hit the roof all the time.
Yeah.
Some passes even hit the roof. So, but we're in there. And so then it's my first year there in the winter. And I'm from California. You know, I mean, I'm San Francisco. I'm dying. So we were outside, and someone said, well, Forrest Gregg was mentioned to me specifically saying, hey, you toughen them up. You practice out in the elements. It might have been Larry McCarron or somebody.
Probably, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And he said, we practice outside. You play the game outside, you practice outside. Okay, so I'm outside. We're practicing. We're slipping. Guys are running into each other. Guys are blowing. They're going. They're crying. It's just awful. And so I go, okay, that's it. We're not doing that. And so then we went inside. I said, look, we will deal with the elements on Sunday. But one, I want a good practice so we can function. And two, I am so cold I can hardly talk. So we're going inside.
Super Bowl champion Mike Holmgren joined us
here.
There
you go. And there's the Super Bowl right there.
There's
the Super Bowl right there.
Mike, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. I know you're living in Seattle, so maybe you want to make sure that nobody will slash a tire or something. But who do you think ends up winning this weekend?
Well, I think that the way the Seahawks have been and injured a little bit, I think it's going to be a tough ball game for them in Green Bay. I really do. I think it's – now, I've said that, and they've – managed to figure out a way to win these games this season, the whole season. So I always say I've got friends in both organizations. I hired a few people, and so I want to see a great football game. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to pick one, but I think it's Seattle has to play their best.
Once both you and Leroy Butler are inducted as members of the 2020 Pro Football Centennial Class Hall of Fame. Mike, appreciate it, man, and thank you once again for joining us here today.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
That's Coach Mike Holmgren joining us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, 105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM, and the freeradio.com app.
So our boss was listening to this, and he's texting me, and I don't know if he's texting you guys.
Yeah, we're on the same
right?
text.
And he's like, this is great radio, and that story about him playing God and calling Reggie, that's a great story. And again, remember, so when they were doing their thing, I was a lot younger. So I used to watch that coach's TV show. And what's it called now? All Packers or something.
Total
Packers. Packers. Yeah, you were Leroy, right?
Yeah, well, Matt LaFleur
show. And it's Matt LaFleur. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's I mean, I love the Leroy part. But other than that, it's an okay show. When Holmgren had his own show and he did that coach's show, I'm telling you, and I watch McCarthy shows too, there's nobody like him. Mike Holmgren is one of the best storytellers we've come across as far as sports personalities in this state. This dude can tell a story, have you on the edge, and then deliver the punchline perfectly, and everybody erupts with laughter. He did it all the time on his coach's show, whether it's telling a story what happened in the locker room that week, talking about something that happened in the past, making fun of somebody in the crowd, or playing it up with some little kid in the crowd. He was just simply the best when it came to dealing with people, dealing with the media, the whole deal, and I mean, right there. I mean, he was on for a half hour. Mm-hmm. Didn't feel like a half hour.
And that's what I was telling you about that. Those speeches he would have, he'd come sit next to you. He'd say, I need more. Or we're going to lose. And I mean, the one real quick was the one when I was wearing the Jordan shirt.
Right.
I told you that one day. And he was like, why don't you have your shirt? I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, go do something. Make some plays. Yeah, instead of wearing Jordan shirt, you can wear your shirt. But you're no good. So that's why you got to wear Jordan shirt. So go make some plays, and you can wear your shirt. I'll never forget that. That's what it takes to get the most out of your players.
Man, that was awesome. That was so much fun. If you missed any part of it, hit the rewind feature on the radio.com app. Go check it out. Time stamped at about 4:32. Yeah, no doubt about it. And thank you to 1057FMTheFan.com and John Paul's Buick GMC for having Fan On Demand, where you can hear that interview coming up in just a couple of minutes from right now. And about a half hour from right now, we'll talk to Ryan Wood. He's up at Packers practice with a couple of DNPs that I don't think people were hoping to hear three days before a playoff game. We'll bring those to you as well. That's Great Lakes Dragway Pick a Lane coming up next. But first, guys, Bofording Beer, a premium quality beer due to its superior ingredients, 100% natural barley, the freshest hops, and the freshest spring water used in the production of Bofording Beer. Talking about over 250 years of family-owned brewery experience. That's right, Bofording. family-owned since 1764 in the country of Luxembourg, and ever since then, they've been crafting their brews to achieve the pinnacle of drinkability and smoothness. Everything in the lineup, from the crisp Pilsner, the smooth triple ale, and the perfectly balanced Brune, are all designed to give you the full flavor that doesn't fill you up. Guys, a little secret about Bofrink beer, unlike other imports that you're drinking, it's not owned by a gigantic corporation, it's not brewed in mass quantities, you don't need to put a piece of fruit in it to make it taste good, because it is good, because it's made in small batches with a personal family touch, and they've been doing it for a little bit of time. Go test it out right now today. Grab a six-pack of Total Wine and More in Brookfield and in Greenfield. Raise Wine and Spirits or any festival food location. It's on tap at Cafe Hollander, the Nomad, or Revere's in Delafield. And always, when you're enjoying a Bofrink, let me know at Bill Schmidt Radio. And Bofrink Bill, myself, might come out and have a Bofrink on you. Drinking Bofrink today and drinking the Boff with Milwaukee's favorite smooth drinking import. We have Ryan Wood in a half hour. Great Lakes Dragway Pick a Lane is next on the Wendy's Big Show, 105.7 FM, The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.